Carol Pope.
Hi, I'm Kevin Staples.
And you're listening to Rainbow Country
with Mark Terra.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the persons appearing on the program.
Today on Rainbow Country, my coverage of the 49th edition of the Toronto International Film Festival continues, and on this episode, a spotlight on three queer films. By the way, on this episode, listener discretion is advised. That and more in episode 427, so stay tuned. For Gay Talk Radio right here on Rainbow Country.
Hello, my name is Conchita.
And I'm Barbecue.
And my name is Hardcora. And we are the B-Girls.
You're listening to
Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Well, hello, and welcome to a brand new journey through Rainbow Country. As I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country and producer and host, Mark Tara. By the way, Rainbow Country originates from CIUT-FM in Toronto and now proudly in syndication across Canada from coast to coast to coast. The Yukon, British Columbia, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, the east coast of Canada in Newfoundland, Ontario, even down to Buffalo, New York, and online. Well, thanks to you, tuning in, streaming, downloading, but ultimately listening. Together, we continue to build Rainbow Country into a nationally syndicated gay radio show, as well as being recognized as a number one Canadian LGBT podcast. So today, a spotlight on three queer films that were part of this year's Toronto International Film Festival. A short film from Sweden whose title is rather provocative, and I will say, listener discretion advised. The name of that short film, Fuck Me. Out clubbing with friends, a woman acts according to the roles and rules she's been taught, only to discover that different ones may apply. Joining me to talk about this short film is the film's director, award-winning queer filmmaker, Annette Sidhu. And went up the hill. Jack ventures to remote New Zealand for the funeral of his estranged mother and meets her widow, Jill. I speak with the film's music composer, Hanan Townsend. Plus in hour two, music from LGBT artists, independent artists, voices that we've come to know and love in classic disco, classic 80s, classic house, and on this episode, I'm featuring some classic funk, a bitch track set, and more. All that lies ahead as we start journey 427 through Rainbow Country, and starting us off, from Thailand, the feature, The Paradise of Thorns. An unmarried gay couple builds a home and a durian farm together. After one partner's accidental death, his family seizes his assets due to lack of legal marriage recognition. I speak with the film's director, writer, and producer, Boss Koonin, and producer, Sandra D. Pongsetasat. Boss Kuno, hi, how are you?
Okay, fine.
You're fine, you're good? Yes, excellent. I have to say congrats on your film, The Paradise of Thorns, and congrats on being at the 49th edition of the Toronto International Film Festival. First of all, how are you enjoying this year's TIFF?
ก็จริงๆตื่นเต้นมากเพราะว่า
He said that he's pretty excited that the film is finally in TIFF this year, because like back when like on it, like his college days, and he studied films and he always heard of TIFF before. So when he did his first movie and it's finally here, he's pretty excited.
Boss, you direct this film, you co-wrote the screenplay. What is the story that you're telling in The Paradise of Thorns?
คือจุดเริ่มต้นของการทำหนังเรื่องนี้คือมันเกิดจากการที่ว่าประเทศไทย
This movie started
มันยังไม่มีกฎหมาย
You know, in Thailand before this year, we don't have same-sex marriage. So he thinks that it's the topic that he's into because he's also the LGBTQ and he thinks about like this thing a lot and he thinks that it's interesting to tell the story about same-sex marriage. So after that, like he think that like it's a good topic to raise awareness or the topic in the society so people can talk or discuss about that. So yeah, with everything, it's going down to the topic of like equality and like the gender equality or even like the social status equality that we want to tell in the story, in the movie.
Vandrady Pongsetisat, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Am I saying your name correctly? Because I know I'm not.
Yeah, it's pretty much Vandrady Pongsetisat, but you can call me Wan for short.
Wan?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Talk to me about, you are a producer on this film. You've been producing since 2009. Why did you want to bring this particular story to the big screen now? Talk to me about that.
คือพี่มีสองเหตุผลในการทำโปรเจกต์นี้อย่างแรกก็คือ
She have like two key reasons to why she want to produce this film. The first one would be like the, you know, like the inequality in Thai society, not just, you know, like marriage inequality, but also like other inequality, like, you know, lack of access to legal support, education system, and, you know, like gender inequality. And also she really wanted to work with Boss Kuno because, you know, like he has been working on like formatted series, but never like a feature film.
So your film, The Paradise of Thorns, revolves around a Dorian fruit farm. Can you talk to me about the Dorian fruit and essentially what is this? Because it's very infamous.
Okay, ก็คือได้ดูแล้ว
ได้ดูแล้ว
คือจริงๆนะคนจริงๆทุเรียน
Okay, so Dorian is pretty popular in Thailand. Actually, I think it'sKind of popular in Southeast Asia a lot, because but the topic that we want to talk about the most is because it's valuable and really expensive. It's expensive because, you know, to grow a durian you need to have like 5 years to grow the tree, the durian tree, and then when you hit like the fifth year, that's when you can actually like collect all the fruits. So you have to spend like the whole 5 years getting nothing until like the fifth year, then you can really get something. So he wants to present this timeline along with like the story of the couple in the movie, that they build up their relationship and they help each other throughout like the whole 5 years to create like their bond between each other. And that's the base of the storyline that makes this story valuable to the protagonist. So he actually like bonding with the durian itself also. So and he actually add that like we try to find like a lot of fruits to fit with the movie, because we want to do like we want to start with like the land that been taken, but the land itself is not valuable as much as like, you know, the fruit farms or the house itself. So we try to find a lot of fruits. And yeah, so we going with durian because, like, you know, the story of durian is pretty extraordinary, and we think that it really fits the movie.
So, Bosch, the very opening of the movie, where the couple, the two men, where they're searching for something, and then they find what they're looking for, and there's a big scream of excitement. The very opening is very, it's interesting, it's intriguing, but it's also very funny and touching all at the same time. Was the very opening of this film always meant to be what it is now, the way that it does open now? Was that always the way that it was intended to be?
So the story has been like this since when he thought about the idea of the whole movie, because personally he wants to talk about the love between two men that work together, like, you know, working on the durian process together. So, and one day, like, one person died, and that person family came in to take the whole thing from the other person. So this is the whole idea. This is the tagline that Boss came up and talked with Wanwardi since the start. So when he continued working on the script writing, he still keep the whole idea with the script from the beginning. And he think that, like, he wants to talk about the pure love of LGBTQ and leads everything into, like, you know, like, the disaster at the middle and the end of the story. So the first 5 minutes, it's really important to talk about, like, you know, the true love that will continue throughout the movie, so people can feel it and can see it and can relate with it. So we can continue, like, you know, the whole story or the message that we want to talk about the movie.
So, one, the title, The Paradise of Thorns. Is there a particular story that goes along with choosing this particular title, The Paradise of Thorns? Why this particular title?
จุดเริ่มต้นมาเริ่มจากพี่พยายามจะหาคำหนึ่งที
่ So at first she was trying to find, like, you know, like, the keyword for this film, and the first word that came up was durian. As the origin of the meaning of the word durian in Malayu was thorns, it means, like, thorns. So the first word that came to mind, and she thought that it represents the essence of this film really well, is thorns. So when it comes with the Paradise of Thorns, it, like, highlighting the importance of the durian orchard in this film. Everything take place at this orchard, you know, like the love story, the fight, everybody competing to own this paradise. It all happens at this orchard, and it gives, like, you know, like, the sense of Gone with the Wind. You don't know, you have no idea how each person are gonna fight and gonna win over this paradise of thorns.
Well, I have to say, to Boss and to One, well said, well done, well filmed, well made. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show, as well as for yourself, Yanisa, the translator. Thank you. Job well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The Paradise of Thorns is currently doing the film festival circuit. By the way, on IMDb, The Paradise of Thorns has a rating of 7.8 out of 10. Up next, I speak with film composer Hanan Townsend about the new film, Went Up the Hill.
Hi, this is Michael Anthony Alago, music executive, photographer, author, and you are listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Anna Townsend. Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
We are here at the 49th edition of the Toronto International Film Festival. You have a film that's part of the festival, Went Up the Hill. First of all, how's TIFF treating you? How has your experience been so far?
I just love, this is my first time coming to TIFF. And I just love the energy. Everyone's just, I've had so many wonderful conversations, met so many wonderful people. So I will most certainly be coming back when the next opportunity arises.
So you are a musician, you're a pianist, you're a composer. You did the score for the film Went Up the Hill. From your perspective, as someone who did the score, what's the story being told in this film?
Yeah, so it's a story about, firstly, it's a thriller, kind of meets horror, psychological thriller. And it's really a story about trauma and generational trauma. It's quite haunting. It's a ghost story. And the characters actually play a third character together. They share it. So they play one and a half characters. It's a really interesting premise. But, you know, that generational trauma is really what the story's about. Like, how does one heal from that? What's that process? And it doesn't even answer all those questions. It just kind of opens that up for people and explores it in the film.
So for you, as a composer, what is it that you see or you take from what you see to create the atmosphere for the film? Do you just see the images and hear the dialogue and you just get inspired from that?
Yeah, that's a part of it. For me, I find that I love to be able to write from inside the mind of the character. And for this particular film, because it's so quiet and so intimate, I don't know if you've seen the film or not, but we really felt like the music wanted to be coming out of the characters themselves. So like an internal kind of score that's playing. And that's often the way I write a lot, is how do I get inside the characters' minds so I can write from that headspace. Another component is the cinematography. Cinematography leads me often to how would I write the music for this as well. I'm just very inspired by visuals, so that's a helpful component. And of course, the story and the narrative itself is a huge, you know, it's the skeleton of it all, really. Yeah.
So how did you end up on this particular project? Was this something that came to you? Was it something that you sought out?
So I've worked with, in the past, with a music supervisor, Andrew Kotoka, and he connected me with Sam Van Grinsven, the director. We just got on the phone, and I think at that point I'd read the script, and I was very fascinated by the story.
You actually read the script?
Yeah, I did read the script, yeah.
Is that common?
Yeah, often. I mean, I think it just gives you a sense of the story and how it plays out. And obviously it's not going to tell you specifically all the details of how it's going to look and how it's going to feel, but just the, you know, understanding the skeleton of the story. And then when I spoke with Sam, he just had such a artistic vision for what he wanted the music to be. And that was one of the main things that I just wanted to work with him, because I was just like, here's a true artist who it just was so full of wonderful ideas, and nothing was off limits, but he also had a very strong sense of what it was he wanted. Yeah.
So scoring a film, what does that mean? What does that entail? Because there's that aspect, but there's also like Foley yeah. work, which is like yeah. the sound effects, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So can you talk to me about what scoring a film like entails?
Yeah, so for this movie, we really wanted to blur the lines between the sound design and the music, which...
Did you end up doing both?
Yes. So we have a lot of like breath elements, like rhythmical breathing, and then different kind of vocal effects that would really kind of fall into maybe sound effect categories, but we blended those with the score. So we really wanted to gray the lines between where does the sound design start and where does the music start. Like, let's gray that area as much as we can. And yeah, it was just so much fun working with vocalists and doing things that were just so outside the box, you know. So in terms of where to score fit, it's different for each picture, you know. In this particular one, we just really wanted to try and push into that sound design area more and more, yeah.
Tell me how someone who was born in New Zealand, raised, I believe, on a dairy farm, ends up doing scoring music work in film in Hollywood. How does that happen? Was this something that you always wanted to do, work in film, doing music?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a love for music.
Do you come from a musical family?
Not really. A little bit. No, but not a overtly musical family. I just always loved music. I kind of jokingly say that it was my escape out of getting out of chores on the farm. but it wasn't probably until I was a little older, 15, 16, 17, somewhere around there, where it really started to click for me that I was like, I would love to do that. That's what I want to do.
Was there something in particular? Was there a flashpoint, a moment, maybe a specific film where you said...
It was actually The Lord of the Rings that Howard Shore's score for. It just captured my imagination in a way that...
shot in New Zealand.
Well, it was shot in New Zealand. I feel like as a Kiwi, it's kind of like... I don't know. I kind of don't want to tell people that, but I got to be honest and be true. It's like the music for those films is incredible, and it just really captured. They came out right at a time where I was just really kind of searching for what it was I wanted to do. And then of course exploring other movies as time's gone by. I love a lot of the darkness of a lot of British films, and just really felt like I wanted to have a career in it. So,
So, Hannon, this next film we both share in common, 2021's His Name is Ray.
Yes.
His Name is Ray, directed by Michael Del Monte.
Yes. Who lives here in town.
It's a Canadian film about a homeless person here in Toronto. I've had him on the show to talk about that film.
Okay.
But you scored that film.
Yes, yeah.
How was that project for you?
It's always a absolute pleasure to work with Michael. It was obviously a project that is there was a lot of emotions in that, working on that for me. Very raw, very verite cinema, just observing some of the life of what it's like to be on the streets. And I think that we just tried to create music that had, it's quite dark, the score's quite dark, but we also really wanted there to be a sense of hope, because there is, that we want to hold on to hope for anyone who's, you know, in various stages of homelessness. And it's a powerful story. Yeah, it's been winning awards too. It just won the Melbourne Best International Documentary, and I just saw it's going to Buffalo, New York for the Buffalo Film Festival. So I'm so glad to see, because he shot that film a while ago, and I'm so glad to see it's been recognized for a really great study on and putting people in a position where they're going to sit there with Ray and see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that was in what? 2021, but you were nominated for that score for Best Original Score Documentary at the 2021 International Sound and Film Music Festival. Congrats on that nomination.
Oh, thank you. Cheers.
How did that make you feel, getting nominated for your work?
I mean, it's always so nice to be nominated for things. I don't set out seeking nominations, so if they happen to come, I'm always like, that's fantastic. But I just like to work and do what I do, and if people recognize it along the way, I'm very happy with that. But I'm not setting out to win awards, or I just want to write music that moves people and has something to say.
Have you ever worked on a project and you thought in the back of your mind, you know what, damn, I really nailed that, and
yes.
And it just sort of like comes and goes, and it's like, damn.
Well, I was talking about that with someone before, where in order for the music to be recognized, often the film has to be recognized, and sometimes films just don't hit. And the score could be the greatest work I've ever done, but the film doesn't resonate with audiences, and that's just part of the business. And
do you have any say if something is released as an album or as an official playlist for the film in regards to the score, the music? Do you have any say in that?
Yeah, I usually help facilitate that process of reaching out to labels, soundtrack labels, and just seeing if we can find a good home for the soundtrack. It depends on the film and depends on who owns the score, whether it's the production, but I'll usually just help facilitate that process. So most of my scores you can find on, you know, online, on streaming, on Spotify. Yeah.
Here's my last question for you. What do you hope audiences come away with? They take away from hearing your music, hearing your score, whatever the project may be. What do you hope audiences come away with after they've experienced Hanan Townsend?
Well, I work on a lot of different projects in a variety of different genres. A lot of people say that I have a spiritual sensibility in the music I write. And I would say that I would hope to think that my music gives people a sense of curiosity towards the mystery of all of that, and that it maybe gives people a little hope. Like, I like to write music that is dark but always has a turn towards something hopeful. I hope that resonates with people. I can't dictate how people take my music, but yeah.
Well, I have to say, Hanan Townsend, thank you so much for your time. Well said, well done, well scored.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show. Thank
you. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Went Up the Hill is currently doing the film festival circuit. For even more on the film's composer, simply visit HananTownsend.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Gino Vanelli. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Hi, I'm Carol B., the host and producer of radio programs Ruby Slippers and Through the Looking Glass. In many parts of the world, one will be excluded or even persecuted just for being gay. And so it's so very important to have a program like Rainbow Country, whose mandate is to provide a platform for the LGBT community to have a voice, share ideas, and promote inclusiveness. Through thought-provoking interviews, review of cultural events, and music, your host and producer, Mark Tara, showcases the very best the LGBT community has to offer. Rainbow Country, 2 hours well spent.
In June 2014, I was fortunate enough to cover North America's first World Pride that took place in Toronto. The interviews and footage that I captured was recently turned into a documentary that's officially out now. A Different Kind of Love is the name of the documentary and can be found on OutTV and OutTV Proud, which is available on Apple TV and other streaming platforms. So, as you may know, in June, I won the Out Loud Best in LGBT Radio Programming from the NCRA, the National Community Radio Association.
I received that honor for my episode on Operation Soap, the bathhouse raids that happened on February 5th, 1981. So if you think what I'm doing here on Rainbow Country, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond, available on broadcast radio, streaming, as well as an edited podcast. If you think what I'm doing here is worthwhile, I hope you'll consider making a donation to this very outlet you are tuned to. If you're listening to the edited podcast, I hope you'll consider making a donation to an outlet that does carry Rainbow Country. How can you find out? Well, it's simple. Simply head over to marktara.com where everything is connected and hit the donation banner. That's where you'll find all the outlets that carry Rainbow Country. A little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. Have your voice, have your support be heard.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station specifically for our issues to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And of course our artists and the things that we do globally and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So support, tune in. Thank you.
Up next, I speak with award-winning queer filmmaker Annette Sidhu.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Annette Sidhu. Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. It's amazing to be in Toronto. I just love it.
Mm. First of all, am I saying your name correctly, Annette Sidhu?
Sidhu. Annette Sidhu. But maybe in English it will be Annette Sidhu. I don't know. Actually, it means pages if you translate it. So
pages.
Yeah, sometimes when I was at a festival earlier, they did somehow translate it. So it said Annette Page. And I was like, Ellen Page, Annette Page. Yes, I can do that.
Oh, okay. Okay. You, first of all, thank you for your time. And thank you for being on the show. You have a short film, part of the 49th edition of the Toronto International Film Festival. How has your TIFF experience been so far?
Oh, amazing. I mean, this is a great festival. I'm part of the Shortcuts program, and there is just so many amazing filmmakers, and it's a great program, amazing films as well. So I'm really happy to be here, to be invited.
So you are a filmmaker. Your film is called, and prepare yourself, everyone, prepare yourself. But your film is called Fuck Me. Fuck Me.
Yes.
Let's start with this title. What is the story behind this particular title for your short film, Fuck Me? Because I'm sure there has to be one.
Yes. I mean, I thought the title was so obvious that the Fuck Me had to be the title, because it's basically what it's about. It's about a girl. It's about norms, first of all, norms, gender norms, femininity. I wanted to explore further how women are so good at playing this the role of this perfect woman, and to be, you know, an object, to be sexy, to focusing on the other person's needs and feelings. And so I was exploring femininity norms, if I say that. And for me, I think femininity is irresistible. You can't really say no to that, right? So it started out, I saw an image of a beautiful young man who was only in his boxers, and you could see that he had a erection under his shorts, and he was laying backwards with arm crossed, and he looked really passive and very beautiful. And I was looking at this image, and it looked like he wasn't on his way acting on his erection. And I couldn't really believe in this image. I was like, a horny man saying no to sex. What is that? Is that possible? So it got stuck with me, and I wanted to explore the situation behind the image, like who was there with him. And I thought, if it's a woman and if she's playing, you know, she's doing everything right, she's playing this role perfectly, what would happen? What would she feel in this situation? So that was the start, I think. And then Fuck Me was just, you know, I also had, I was here with my previous film, Fuck You, a couple of years ago. So there is a connection between those films, absolutely.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes.
So, okay, so did you get any pushback when it comes to the title for your 2024 short, maybe even as well as your 2018 short? That one was called Fuck You. That was an award-winning short. But this one, because I'll share a little story with you. Last TIFF, there was a Canadian feature that was called Pussy, and it had to change its name. And it changed its name to Soft. So did you get any pushback?
I mean, this is the world premiere, and no, not so far. Like I know that it's much harder to sell a short film with this kind of name. Like, we had that problem with Fuck You, and sometimes, you know, festivals and TV channels and VOD, other places don't want to buy it because of its name. But for me, since I made Fuck You and it went very well, and I was like, this name is so perfect for the story. That's what it's all about, basically. And so, you know, it's worth it. Even if I miss out on some things, I think also it stands out in a way. And people can also see my, like, what I do as a filmmaker, how I work, like it's connected. And also there is a third film coming. It's a feature film. But
is that called Fuck Us?
Fuck Yeah. I don't know. I haven't actually decided exactly what to call it, but because I think it's more problematic with feature films, so maybe that's why this other film, Pussy, what was the name? Pussy.
It was called Pussy, but they had to change it to Soft, and it was a feature.
Soft. Oh my god, they changed from Pussy to Soft.
Correct.
Wow. Well, I think feature films, you know, it's a bigger market for those films, and I think that's, yeah, maybe. So that's why I don't know what to call the third film, but I'm thinking about somehow getting in a F. I don't know how, but we'll see. Because I think it's nice. I think it's funny, you know.
I think North America is a little uptight at times, and I think North America needs to relax.
Yes.
Relax and enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
You were mentioning you have your 2018 film, Fuck You, that's award-winning.
Yes.
Is 2024's Fuck Me, is this a sequel?
What do you mean? What does it mean? Sorry, my English.
A sequel, it's like a follow-up to.
Yeah, well, it's not
a follow-up. Or a continuation of the story to some degree.
Yeah. I work with the same themes. You know, I work with gender norms, specifically femininity and masculinity. Mm-hmm. So I work with gender norms, femininity, masculinity, sex, and power. Mm-hmm. If I only choose one of those, I would say power is actually what I do. And so they are all connected. Like, everything I write is about that somehow. I always end up writing new sex scenes. You know, it's like I can't sometimes. And my wife, she was like, can you write something normal? Can you do something really normal? And I actually try. And then I end up writing a new sex scene. So it's like, it's a curse. Can't get out of it.
It's interesting that in your 2024 film, the character, the main character, is female, and she asks for what she wants, but she's rejected.
Yeah.
And I think that it's interesting because the commentary being said there that potentially sometimes when women go after what they want, they're rejected.
Yes. Well, for me, it was like the idea actually came from this image of this young man. And for me, I had a problem, you know, because masculinity norms says that men should always want to have sex. They should always
be the aggressor.
Yeah. So I, like, my problem was that I couldn't see that a man could say no to a feminine, like this perfect woman. But I was also, so the hardest thing with the film was, because when we had the script, because there is not many dialogue, many lines who actually tells what she feels in this situation. And I remember when I wrote this scene, the script, I said to my producers, I was like, I don't even know if it's possible to tell this story, you know, because there is nothing to hold on to. And it's a lot of images of a long sex scene. And how do I actually do that and still like tell the story within only visuals? And what is she? And I knew what she was, what I wanted her to experience in the end and what I wanted her to feel. But when a lot of people read the script, they were, they always, you know, when it comes to women and sex and sexuality, they always, you know, it's always land on shame, that she feels shame about something or rejected about him, or, you know, people feel sorry for her in a way. And I was like, well, she still have the power. For me, in that situation, she's not vulnerable. She's just playing a game. She's doing this. She's just following the gender norms. She's just doing what she learned since she, very young age, to grow up as a girl, you know. So for me, it was the opposite, basically, that she still have the power, and it's more of a, she's more of a, she gets surprised that a guy actually, because what is happening in this situation? He actually sees her. He actually he's a giver. He actually is a feminine energy in that room, because he wants to give her pleasure. He's focusing on her. So it's the two femininities meeting each other. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah.
But then she says those two words.
Fuck me.
And he walks away.
Yes. Because what do you think?
Because I think that he didn't want to go there. So she asked for what she wanted, but then she was rejected. And sometimes I think that, I mean, this is what I took away from the film. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes when women know what they want, and they go after what they want, they can be perceived as, you know, aggressive, shrill, a bitch, and can potentially be rejected.
Yes. Right?
And so I think at the very end, that's what happens to her. And she's rejected by asking for what she wants.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, you're not supposed to be that driven as a woman. You're supposed to be passive, and a man should be the one who drives the situation. So in a way, I mean, yes, I know what you mean. Like, if a woman is too much or too too horny or whatever, that can be too much. Because it's not supposed to be like that. So that's another point of view of it, of course.
Do you see yourself as a provocative filmmaker?
No, actually not. Because I remember when I did Fuck You, I did a film who was really like, it was just my world, the knowledge I've gained during my from my teenage years and until now. And people said it was really provocative. And I was like, okay, well, is it? You know, I didn't see that at all. It's not something I'm seeking for. I'm just want to create, first of all, I want to create dream. That's why I work with fiction and not documentaries. And I want to create empowering stories. I want to lift up what I think is the problem, which is like norms, basically, and hierarchies and power and these rules that we all are following without even, you know, sometimes we don't know it. The expectations we put on each other, especially in a sexual situation, we have so much expectations. And in a sexual situation, it's also like a lot of things is about like, what is to have great sex? What is good sex? It's a time frame as well. Like how long should we have sex? How should we have sex? Like what can actually happen? And I think sex should be the opposite. It should be to explore the now with another person. So I think these norms, this hierarchy, these rules that we are following can be really toxic in a way.
A lot of your films tell LGBT stories. For you as a filmmaker, why is it important for you as a filmmaker to tell queer stories?
First of all, I'm queer. I am I'm pansexual, I would say, or lesbian, or, you know, I don't really know, but I'm not heterosexual. And I think a lot of times I get this question from people in Sweden who is working with film, who has money and power, and they ask me, why don't you do lesbian stories? You're together with a woman, why don't you do that? And I always answer like, well, I don't have a problem with that. You know, film is about problems, right? And I love lesbians. I love trans. I love gay. I love, that's wonderful. Like that's life. That's what I want, you know? But films is about problem. And I think my first issues when I was a little girl, actually, what I met was the norms and how I didn't really fit into this, to be this perfect girl, and how I noticed that I did change a lot when I was hanging out with my friends, like girlfriends, and we had fun. And then suddenly when we were hanging out with the guys, how all of us just changed and became something else. We were not supposed to be funny with the guys because they were supposed to be funny and we were supposed to laugh at their jokes, basically. So all of these things has been with me for, you know, as long as I can remember. And that is my biggest issue with this world. You know, this very, very small roles that we should play. And I think, I mean, if I have a message, it's that I believe that we are everything. I believe that we are. Whoever you are, you're both feminine and masculine, and you can vary between those. Mm-hmm. And to love the extreme, I think it's super sexy with femininity and masculinity and everything in between. And I think that we have to, you know, be whoever we want to be, basically. So, and I don't see that in this society. I don't see that we can be that. Mm. I see that we expect a lot of a woman and of a man, like, so we're basically in the same jail. Like, it's the freedom is for me to be able to be whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Well said. I have to say, Annette Sidhu, well said, well done, well filmed. Thank you for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. And thank you for watching the film and for very nice talking to you.
Fuck Me is available on Mubi.com. And for even more, simply visit forgetproduction.com.
If we think of the 1970s as the period where the gay community was trying to get noticed, the 1980s was the time when we actually got noticed and started getting seriously slammed. The cops had never been happy with Trudeau's 1969 decriminalization. If you look at historian Tom Hooper's work, you'll see that arrests of gay men actually increased across the country after decriminalization. Remember, this was way before apps. If you wanted to hook up, baths or bars were the best places to go, so those were the places that police targeted. There were a series of bath and bar raids in Montreal and Toronto and Edmonton and Ottawa and other cities. The Toronto bath raids of February 5th, 1981 are the most famous. When Toronto's pro-gay mayor John Sewell and the first openly gay candidate for city council, George Hislop, were both defeated in the municipal elections in 1980, the cops figured we were vulnerable and swooped. They smashed into most of the city's gay baths, trashed the places, and arrested almost 300 men on a range of charges. It wasn't just the baths, they were also hassling the bars on concocted liquor license violations, and they were busting individuals and bookstores for porn. Basically, they were trying to shut down the gay village and recriminalize homosexuality. But that night when they hit the baths, they bit off more than they could chew. In Toronto, for the first time, the activists and the small business people and the normally non-political bar and bath patrons all came together in a series of massive demonstrations. We raised money to fight the charges in court and won. We made common cause with Black and South Asian communities who are also experiencing police brutality and harassment, and we demanded community control of the police. We called for changes to the criminal code to get rid of antiquated laws that still criminalized sex. That new community unity also laid the foundation for dealing with the next crisis that was about to affect us all, the AIDS epidemic. This is Tim McCaskill, a gay liberation dinosaur from another planet and author of Queer Progress.
Hi everyone, this is Mark Tewksbury, Olympic champion, leader, humanitarian. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Taking us to hour two of Rainbow Country, deep in vogue from the 1990 documentary, Paris is Burning.
as much as possible like your straight counterpart. Like your straight counterpart.
Hi, this is Police Constable Danielle Botno, also known as LGBT Cop, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Terra.
This is hour two of Rainbow Country, where I feature music from LGBT artists, independent artists, voices that we've come to know and love in classic disco, classic 80s, classic house. So if you stay with me, if you stick with me, I hope you think I'm bringing you music worth hearing. Starting us off, a classic funk set.